Good morning. This is Leading Age Maryland Tuesday Stand-Up. Today we have Denise Shoke from RCM&D.
Hi, good morning, everyone, and welcome to Tuesday Stand-Up. This is part three of a three-part series on how to manage a serious safety event, particularly in those first 24 hours after you've had that adverse event. Again, this is part three, and my name is Denise Shope. I'm a risk management consultant with RCM&D and a registered nurse. I've been in healthcare for the last 33 years of my life and in healthcare risk management about the last 22 years of my life, working with the entire continuum of care, advancing patient safety, resident safety, working in quality improvement, and in risk management as well. Again, today is part three. If you've missed the first two parts, the overall objective of our program is to really talk about and explain what a serious safety event is, how to recognize that serious safety event, and we talked about that in part one. In part two, we talked about the immediate response, how to manage that those first critical hours to take care of your resident, to take care of your resident family, to mitigate any injury or harm to your resident, and to mitigate any potential long-term effects to your organization, whether it be a litigation or credentialing or accreditation or licensure issue. And today in part three, we're really going to talk more about resolution. And of course, resolution goes beyond those first critical hours. This is more of a long-term resolution, but are things that you need to think about and begin to plan for in those first critical hours. So in resolution, there's really four pieces that are going to be happening, four sort of activities. They don't necessarily go in any particular order. You're going to want to first begin to conduct a root cause analysis, and we'll talk about that. You're going to want to be anticipating those future medical care issues and medical care expenses if, in fact, that is the situation with your resident. You're going to want to anticipate future and further disclosure and communication, both internally and externally, especially with family members, but also with other individuals and stakeholders. And fourth, you're going to want to cooperate with your claims management professionals and consider early resolution, if in fact that's the case, from a professional liability malpractice standpoint. So all of these are part of the sort of resolution process, and again, they're really not in any particular order. In fact, they're probably all happening at the same time. So as I mentioned, root cause analysis. This is perhaps a tool that you're familiar with. It's pretty much the process of looking at what happened, why it happened, and how do we keep it from happening again. You may call it RCA or some other quality improvement tool, but most organizations are using some type of root cause analysis process to really drill down and ask yourself, why did this happen? By now, you've probably figured out the what happened. Hopefully, you've been able to put together a timeline, get statements from individual staff members, and begin to tie together all the pieces of the what happened part and your initial investigation. But now you have to figure out, why did this happen? How did this event reach our resident? How did this event happen to our resident? How did they get injured or harmed, or God forbid, how did they pass away, die from this particular serious safety event? So again, we could spend hours talking about the specifics around root cause analysis, but this is something that's going to be started pretty early in your process, and you should have really policies and procedures around how to do these types of RCAs, how to drill down, who's going to be facilitating this, who's going to lead it, who's going to be on your team, how often are you going to meet, what is the process for reporting out the findings of your RCA, who's going to be responsible for the improvement work that comes out of this, the changes, the effectiveness of those changes. And remember, just as a sidebar, that when you begin to look at how can we prevent it from happening again, you start to look at your QAPI, your quality improvement results, you want to keep in mind that Education, staff training is often the weakest tool for improvement, and yet many times that's what we see an RCA focus on. Well, we're just going to re-educate everyone. We're going to re-educate them about the policy. We're going to do an in-service. Those things, I shouldn't say that they're not helpful, because they are. Many times a lack of understanding, a lack of education is sometimes at the root. Well, we just didn't know. We didn't know that that was the policy. But I would challenge you to ask yourself even further, well, why didn't the staff know? Why was there a lack of education or understanding? And look deeper into the root cause of what happened. So if you identify knowledge deficit as a causal factor in your investigation, in your root cause analysis, ask why. Because maybe there's a defect in your overall education program, for example, or how we learn and how we teach is not the most effective way as it comes to, as we talk about adult learners and blended learning. So, again, we could talk on and on about RCAs and quality improvement and what really is most effective. But just keep in mind that education is usually the weakest type of improvement. So you want to look at other opportunities, perhaps maybe looking at some IP, some ways to hardwire a process. Make it easy to not harm someone, to remember, to recall. Relying on memory and vigilance is, again, not the best way to improve a process. So, again, a lot more to be said about that, but we're going to move on. Again, in this resolution phase, you want to continue to look at the needs of your resident. What is the continuing care needs? What's the care management needs? How we manage the aftercare, if you will, after a serious safety event is absolutely critical, particularly from a medical legal perspective. I mean, obviously, we want to take care of our residents. We want to do the right thing, whether they need a higher level of care. Again, thinking about in terms of something very serious, they may have been transferred out of your facility. And so sometimes trying to understand and even know what's going on with that resident can be a challenge. So staying in touch with family is important. Staying in touch with the other care providers, perhaps at the next level of care, is also very important to understand what is the progress. If the resident stays in your community, again, are you able to care for that resident if, in fact, they have additional skill needs or other needs? Is your staff properly trained? Do you have the right resources internally? Perhaps if you're part of a CCRC or a continuum of post-acute care, you may need to pull in other resources. And then, again, that root cause analysis is going to tie into this, because maybe there's a need to change some system issues or some processes around how you deliver care that are going to affect not just this particular resident, but all of your residents. And again, that resolution phase is really about getting that resident to the right level of care and continuing that care to optimize the outcome. Again, communication is going to be key with other care providers and certainly with the family of that resident. Also under this area, under resolution, is this issue regarding the media. We may have talked about that earlier, too. Again, depending on the seriousness of this event, is this something that's going to make the headlines in your community? God forbid, is this going to make national headlines? Is this something so serious that the local media and the national media may pick it up and run with it? If that's the case, if you have that type of an event, that type of seriousness of an outcome, then you really want to consider using some type of media relations expert. If you don't have that internally, if you don't have that public relations person who can manage that, you may need to go outside and actually hire a consultant to help with that. Again, we've seen this over and over again, and it's something that we really encourage, that if the media is going to be involved, print media, news, web, whatever it is, that you get an expert in relations, media relations, to help you with that and have a key contact person internally. You may also want to coordinate that with your legal services, again, because if there's going to be some type of lawsuit or legal involvement downstream from this, what you say to the media, what you say both internally and externally in any of your communications is going to be brought into any future litigation. You have to be organized around this, and you have to prepare not only your senior executives but also your staff. It wouldn't be uncommon or unheard of to have one of your CNAs or your GNAs be stopped in the parking lot, for example, by someone who's holding a microphone and a camera and ask for a statement about something that just happened in your organization. So you need to prepare your staff. Again, this all depends on the seriousness of the event, on your venue. Some communities on a slow day, something that happens in your house, in your community, may actually be a headliner. But perhaps in a large metropolitan area, something serious may go under the radar from the media perspective. So only you know your own organization and your own community better than anyone else. But just keep in mind that media is something that you're going to have to deal with both in the first 24 hours, but possibly even long term. Then you need to think about the event itself. Is this something serious enough that needs to be reported to your insurance carrier? And who does that in your organization? Who is the key point person? Is it the administrator, the owner, someone on the board? Maybe you have a risk manager, your DON. You need to know who that person is, and they need to understand when the event itself would trigger a report to the insurance company. Most likely, if we're talking about some type of serious safety event that harmed a resident, then most likely that's going to be reported to the carrier. Sometimes each insurance company may have different definitions of what's called a potentially compensable event, but those definitions are pretty standard in that, again, if there's an event that happened that was unanticipated and there's harm to the resident, and that harm is either permanent or temporary harm, chances are that's going to meet the definition of a reportable event to your insurance company. And again, God forbid if the event results in the death of a resident, that's pretty obvious. If there is a demand for compensation or financial resolution involving that event, a demand from the family, for example, that would be something that would be reportable. So this definition, this potentially compensable event, is somewhat of an insurance term, a medical legal term, but it just means any type of demand or a potential for compensation from the resident, from the family, from an attorney, or a representative of the resident. That compensation could be anything from financial compensation, like you're going to pay for this, to, well, we just want you to pay for all of the future medical bills or the funeral expenses, for example. So all of those kinds of demands for compensation would trigger a report to your insurance company. But even again, if there's not a demand, but you know sort of in your gut that, boy, this could potentially end up in a lawsuit, you need to make that report. Again, you may also want to think about the event itself. If it's considered a sentinel event or a never event or a serious safety event that's reported to the state, for example, something that resulted in harm, even if your intuition is, well, you know, this kind of stuff happens and maybe it's not that bad, it doesn't hurt to still report it to your insurance carrier because, again, that claims adjuster is going to walk you through the process, and once it's reported, they're on notice, you're just in a much better spot in the future if litigation does occur. As far as resolution, another area you want to think about is again, these sort of medical bills, particularly if you have a resident that goes to a higher level of care or now has additional care needs, there's going to be medical bills that are incurred. Even if they have the best insurance in the whole world, even if there's not going to be any out-of-pocket expenses, medical bills are medical bills, and they still are a form of, quote, damages, if you will, when there is an adverse event. So again, another reason why you would want to report this to your insurance company so that they can help manage this. You're going to have legal counsel and a medical malpractice insurance representative help you with managing all of the future medical bills. Another problem that you might face is if the resident has to go to a higher level of care, is there a potential that they could lose their bed or their apartment or their unit in your community? And then what happens if they do lose their bed? Do they go back on a waiting list? Maybe they're part of a waiver program. It gets very complicated, and these are the types of issues that can really set a family off, in fact, if not the resident themselves, and really sort of begin the thought process around potential litigation. So how are you going to manage that? Who's responsible for making the decisions about whether or not that resident can return to your organization, and how is all of that coordinated? When we talked a little bit earlier about disclosure and apology in one of the previous sessions, many times the families want to know about who's going to pay the bill. Are you going to put a hold on the bill, and who makes that decision in your organization? Because again, this is going to come up time and time again. It may not be the first thing that the family brings up or the first thing that you want to talk about, but eventually this issue of bills and who's going to pay is going to have to be part of the conversation. And so a prompt, fair, equitable, reasonable resolution is going to have some component of future medicals and who's going to pay the bill. Again, another reason why you want to get your administration and your insurance company involved, because there are ways to manage that and to do it well. Ideally, you want to make sure that your resident and your family, the resident's family, does not incur any type of financial burden. I mean, that's the overall goal. And many times that's the primary concern of the family, unfortunately. So in summary, the first session we talked about recognizing that serious safety event. What is it in your organization? What type of event would have to occur in order for you to have a serious event response team or some type of process in place to trigger a full-scale, full-blown investigation and early resolution? And then how are you going to respond? What's the first thing you need to do? What are all sort of the moving parts that you need to think about? We talked a lot about that in part two. And then finally in part three in resolution, you're thinking more about the root cause analysis and then making sure that the resident gets the ongoing continuing care that they need. And then dealing with things like the media and perhaps even your board of directors and other stakeholders. And then the potential for litigation that could occur. So you want to make sure you have your insurance company on board to help you deal with medical bills and possibly an early resolution. Ideally, you want to avoid a lawsuit, if at all possible, and a very aggressive insurance company and malpractice claims manager will want to get in and resolve the issue in a fair and equitable way with the resident and the family as quickly as possible. Remember that sometimes these highest verdicts in these malpractice cases are often based on the perception that there was either a lack of medical treatment or a lack of concern or sincerity for the resident and the family, and a lack of communication with the family. So all of these need to be considered early on and throughout that entire process. So hopefully you've had the chance to listen in on part one and part two of this series. If you haven't, I know that they've been recorded. It may be something you might want to listen to. If this is the first time you're listening to this three-part series, it may be helpful to go back and listen in on part one and part two. My colleague Nancy did part two, and she did a really nice job with that. If you have any questions after this presentation for myself or for anyone at RCM&D about how to manage a serious safety event, those first 24 hours, early resolution, and a thorough and complete root cause analysis, please let us know. You have our contact information, or you can go through Jill or Deborah, however you want to do that. We'd be glad to help you.
Mm-hmm.
Are there any questions? I think we've used
Thank
our time.
Thank you so much, Denise. I'm going to... All of the lines are unmuted. If anyone has any questions, feel free to go ahead. Doesn't appear that there are any questions right now, but if you would like to talk with Denise or her colleagues afterwards, please call us at Leading Age Maryland and we can connect you with Denise. Denise, thank you so much for bringing us this three-part series on risk management. We really appreciate your sharing your knowledge with us, and if anyone has any suggestions for topics about...
Welcome to Resident Right. If this is your first time taking...